This is the State of Things. I'm Frank Stachow. If you venture to Cam this weekend in Raleigh, you're going to see a rainbow, a tornado, and a raindrop suspended in the air. These weather chambers are part of Alistair MacLamont's latest collection. Alistair's work walks the line between science and art. It challenges the viewer to see the beauty in understanding exactly how things work, both large and small. Alistair is a mixed-media artist. His exhibit, Everything We Are Capable of Seeing, opens at Cam in Raleigh Friday, February 1st. And Alistair MacLamont joins us today on The State of Things. Welcome. Good to have you here.
Hi. Thank you.
I understand that you were very interested in physics as a teen, as you were in studio art. How did you make the choice?
It was a tough one. I think my father was an engineer, so I've always made things. I've always played with bits and pieces and taken things apart, put things back together. And I've always been interested in drawing, painting, sculpting. And so I was kind of in between the two things. And I eventually decided if I was an artist, it would allow me to do whatever I wanted to do. I wouldn't be constrained. So it was the choice to kind of keep the child in me alive, I think.
And it seems, though, what you want to do is recreate some structures that engineers and physicists like to describe in their way, a tornado, for instance.
I think, yeah, it's things that excite you. A physicist would get excited about studying these things and making them, and they're visual as well. So the things I'm doing are very visual things. So they fit somewhere down the middle of the two worlds of science and art, perhaps.
So describe what we'll see at CAM.
Well, the title is Everything We're Capable of Seeing is the name of one of the artworks, which is a rainbow. And so when you get to the museum, there'll be almost a waterfall down one of the sides of the building. And at nighttime, there'll be a really powerful film light that hits that water and creates a rainbow. So it's a nighttime rainbow, and it'll only appear at night. And that kind of frames the show in a way. There are a number of kind of phenomena-based pieces. So there's a tornado in the basement. So there's this fairly dark, quite damp now basement room, because I'm producing cloud in there. So there's a machine that makes cloud, and then a load of fans that whip this cloud into a tornado. And then there's a raindrop, which is the piece is called Raindrop. So it's a machine that suspends a single raindrop in front of you. And it'll stay there hovering in midair. And it's a fairly complex arrangement of wires and fans to keep it there. But you just see this sort of jewel-like raindrop, which becomes a tiny sculpture. And then there's a number of photographic pieces and drawings. I make drawings with the tornado. There's these large inflated steel forms as well. So I've created steel sculptures by welding steel sheets and then inflating them with high-pressure air. So a lot of these pieces, they get made via a process. I don't have control over their end form. It's
The tornado, for instance, and the rainbow. I mean, in both those cases, when we think of a rainbow as a very well structured thing, yours is a little more amorphous, is it not? And the same with the tornado. I mean, you watch it, but it's not always a tornado. It decides when it wants to be a tornado. You have created the conditions, and then we watch and wait, right?
Yeah, that's right. I create the sort of corrects, I suppose, scientific conditions for these things to appear. And some of them require a bit of intervention. The tornado doesn't. It'll come and go. It's there most of the time. It'll sometimes blow itself out and then come back again. It's a very open structure. So it's the goal with most of my work is to make it as simple as possible. So you take away everything that's unnecessary. And in that piece, there's only three fans and a scaffolding structure. And the air spins around the room, and then another fan draws the air up, and then that creates the right conditions for the tornado. But it's if you walk through it, it'll disappear. Then you take a step back, it appears again.
Well, that's what's provocative about these pieces, it seems to me, that we have very clear ideas about what these things are, and they've got their names, don't they? There's a rainbow. We know what that is. We know what a tornado is. But when you watch it in process, you realize how capricious it is and how much it depends on even when you create the conditions, particular conditions in a particular moment will determine whether it remains a tornado or not. And that allows us to think more deeply about the processes that go on and that we're all a part of.
Yeah, I suppose with the rainbow, you've got, it's such a simple thing. You need light and you need an angle. And at the right angle, you get the rainbow. But that means when you look at a rainbow, you're seeing your own individual rainbow, not anyone else's. The guy next to you will see a different rainbow because they're a slightly different angle from the sun. And in this piece, that's kind of exaggerated because the light's much closer. The light's about 30, 40 foot away. And then you have this wall of water, but it's really fine mist. So it's swirling and spinning around. It's kind of one of these like tropical greenhouse mists. It's really fine stuff. So you see swirling shapes blowing around in the wind, and you'll get your own rainbow standing there. And every person will see something completely unique with it. And that also interests me.
Well, it's very striking if you think about it, because you have to be very precise. So there's a kind of a fierce technical side to your work. You have to make the fans work. Mm. Everything's got to be at the right angle. The moisture has to be just so. And you have to be in charge of that. So you got to know something. On the other hand, once you've unleashed all of this, it's kind of on its own. And the people who come to see it are going to have very different experiences. So you can't really predict how people are going to respond to your work.
Yeah, I think that's kind of the interesting part of it to me. It's everyone gets something different out of it, and I'm making things that people see differently, experience differently, and I don't think I prescribe what people are supposed to think. It's not work that's saying you should feel this when you see this thing. It's something that I want to start a conversation. I suppose it's in a way the pieces are designed and structured so that they kind of tell you how it works. You can see all the mechanics in there. So I'm not trying to make a magic trick. So when you see the raindrop piece, everything's left bare on show. So you can figure stuff out, perhaps. In a way, it's like a little concentrated piece of knowledge that you can stare at and then figure it out and investigate. And then maybe there's a joy in understanding it. When you figure it out, there's that joy as well as the aesthetic value of it. And that's quite exciting. Like with the raindrop, there will be a person on hand to put the raindrop back in every now and again. The raindrop evaporates over time, and so it gradually disappears. And when it gets too small, it flies away. And then there's an assistant there who injects a new one in with a small syringe to place it right in the center of the airflow, so it stays there. And then it will stay there for another half hour, perhaps, if you're lucky.
See, that's, you want to be there for that. That's like the feeding of the snakes at the zoo. You want to be there for that moment. I understand that you got a lot of your inspiration from Richard Dawkins' book, I'm Weaving the Rainbow.
Mm-hmm.
Can you talk about that?
I think so. The opening part of that book explains his title. And it's the title's taken from a poem by Keats. And I've been kind of influenced by the Romantics a bit, I think, in my art. And some of it is embracing that, and some of it's more kind of kicking against some of their ideas. And I think the idea of the sublime is a very beautiful idea. So the Romantic poets and painters use this a lot, and it's perhaps that awe-inspiring feeling of looking at a mountain. It's not necessarily a beautiful thing. It is, but it's also this fearful thing and thing of wonderment. So there's this idea of understanding an awe-inspiring thing that's quite amazing.
Well, then. Go ahead.
Oh, and then you've got in the poem Lammia, which has this line, unweaving the rainbow. And Keats, as Dawkins put it, was referring to Newton. So Newton explained in his Optics how the rainbow works. And Keats talks about him unweaving the magic of it and destroying the beauty. And he talks about the cold philosophy as another line. But Dawkins is saying that perhaps in understanding things, in learning about the science of it, there's a real beauty in that, and that it doesn't take away the beauty, that understanding can increase the beauty of something. And I think that's what I believe. I think once you look in something, investigate it, you can find a real deeper beauty. And that led me to make the rainbow piece.
Well, it's interesting because some of the earliest Romantics were in fact thoroughly engaged in science, and the earliest scientists were poets and painters. Because of their sense of wonder that drove them to understand. And it's a bit of a sorrow in our age, isn't it, that we have somehow seen these things as polar opposites, that somehow the romance and the beauty of a thing has to be seen over and against the understanding of it and the demystification of that.
Well, I think for instance, I think Keats was a medical student as well. So there is a debate about whether that's actually right, whether he really did believe that, or whether that all that really referred to the Greek myth that is in the poem as well. But I think the thing, whichever way you feel about it, there is an awful lot of polarity out there. The way people feel about science or art, they're almost seen as opposites, whereas I see both fields as two groups of people who are creating things or being very creative and are getting really excited about stuff. You know, they'll see something that they'll see. I mean, a mathematician will talk about beauty in a piece of maths or in a sequence or a series, and there's a few pieces in the show that entirely look at mathematics in that way. I mean,
when you talk to really committed scientists, they are filled with wonder and joy and awe and inspired by their work in the way an artist would talk about their work. And it's an artistic sense of wonder and curiosity that drives the best of them when you talk to them. So how comes it that we, as the consumers of art and science, who are not expert, we have developed a polarity that I don't think exists in those two worlds?
I think some of this is driven by the representation of these people, perhaps. You know, you look at how a scientist might be portrayed on TV, and they're often dragged onto the news to sort of give their opinion on something. Mm. And, you know, given 5 minutes, and that you're never able to explore the real issues, you just kind of, think. So everything has to be one or the other. People like a black and white idea. They don't like to look at the colors and the shades in between, perhaps. And I think if you see someone who is really excited about something, really engaged about it, you'll get drawn into that.
Yeah, and I think understanding, which is a key word, I think you've brought it up, you've used it a few times here, a deep understanding of something rather than a superficial understanding of how a thing works.
Yeah, absolutely.
Brings you to a far different place in yourself in terms of your understanding. Tell us about the raindrop, the suspended raindrop. How did that piece come about?
So originally I came across an experiment that was on a documentary on British television. A guy who was a meteorologist in Manchester University in the UK was studying the charge on raindrops in relationship to storms and that kind of thing, I think. And I got in touch with him, and he had this machine that suspended a raindrop, not unlike my machine. I wanted to make this. I wanted to recreate what he'd done in this experiment in the 70s. And whereas they were looking at it in quite a cold, you know, scientific way, recording data, I just saw this raindrop hovering for a few seconds as one of the most beautiful sculptures I'd ever seen. And so he then sent me a tiny sketch, a little doodle of this piece. It had a couple of bits of information on it. It said there's a few bits of wire in here, there's this cone shape, and then he showed me the machine itself, but it was in this gigantic box with just a hole in the top. You couldn't really see what it was. And then I spent 2 years trying to build the thing, and I went through a few prototypes, and it became a big experimental process for me as well. I would, to try and make the raindrops stay there longer, I would note down all the times, change the tiniest thing, try it again. And this would always be running in the background while I was making other pieces of art in my studio, just trying to refine it. And I think now I've got it running a lot better in terms of longevity, keeping the drop there, than their machine, after talking to the professor there. So I'm really continuing an experiment, but I'm framing it in an artistic sense. So I'm framing it as an artwork rather than an experiment.
Does it change for you? Does the beauty of the thing change for you after going through all that effort to get it to stay where you want it?
There was a moment when I first saw it, because that really grabbed me, and nothing quite surpasses that. So I think the tornado was the same. There's this long process before I could even see it. So to actually build the machine, it's kind of complex. So that took at least 6 months of building just before I could try it. And then when I saw the raindrop stay there for the first time, and I think it was only about 3 or 4 seconds, My heart leapt. You know, that was a real joyful thing. It's like seeing the tornado for the first time. That took a long time before I found the balance, and nothing quite matches that. But it's still exciting for me.
Well, your heart leapt, but because you did it. There was you worked hard, and you made it happen. And I'm wondering how that feeling compares to the feeling you had when you saw it in that scientist's office and saw it as a beautiful thing. You said, "This is gorgeous. Look at that thing suspended by itself."
I think I mean, that I had a real joy in seeing that the first time. That really grabbed me. And I think there's a lot of sort of very strange scientific experiments going on where there are these magical things happening that are truly beautiful and I think that feeling of seeing that for the first time there has kind of continued throughout me trying to produce my version of this experiment.
Yeah, I'm just wondering too, because when you see it as an object, it appears to be what it is. And I wonder if in the same moment that this thing suspended, and it's a beautiful sight, and if you didn't know what it was, you say, well, that's kind of, because it doesn't just stay in one place, it kind of bounces around a little bit, right? And so there's a little bit of motion, it's very graceful, it is pretty, it glistens at different points along the way. So as an object, if you didn't know what it was, you say, well, that's beautiful. But you do know what it is. So I wonder to what extent you're also saying, I wonder how that works. At the same moment, you're just having a pure aesthetic moment.
I think for me, I'm probably thinking all sorts of different things about it. Yeah, and you start to notice strange things about the raindrop. Your idea of what a raindrop is often wrong, it turns out. It's not this tear-shaped thing. It's a sphere with a flat underside as the air pushes it. And as the drop gets smaller, it changes shape. And a really tiny raindrop is almost a perfect sphere. And a really big one can look like a sort of red blood cell shape as well. It has this strange torus shape, and there's also a limit to how big they can be. And I found that if you put in a really big drop, it'll separate into two smaller ones. So there's this kind of upper and lower limit to them. It's really unusual.
Next, you're going to tell me my heart doesn't look like what's on my Valentine cards.
No, I wouldn't tell you that.
Thank you. I appreciate that. Alistair MacLaymont, thank you so much for being with us.
Thank you.
Alistair MacLaymont, mixed media artist. His exhibit, Everything We Are Capable of Seeing, opens at CAM in Raleigh Friday, February 1st. For more information, visit camraleigh.org. And that's our program for today. We're at stateofthings.org, and this is North Carolina Public Radio, the broadcast service of the University of North Carolina at Chapel Hill. I'm Frank Stachow.